Welcome to the podcast series from the 8th Educational Seminar on Migration 2021 entitled Migration in a Multilateral World, organized by the European Migration Network in Slovakia. You are listening to the lecture on migration situation in Libya and the Mediterranean Sea from the field perspective presented by Federico Soda, the chief of mission of the International Organization for Migration in Libya. Federico is responsible for overseeing IOM's activities in Libya, including humanitarian assistance and emergency response, technical cooperation, capacity building and community stabilization. He is also responsible for providing strategic direction to IOM's response along the Central Mediterranean route. Enjoy the lecture.
Good morning, everybody. I hope that you can hear me. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very happy to be with you this morning. I'm going to speak about the situation in Libya and in more generally a little bit how this is affecting both the Mediterranean, but also what the situation is like for movements into Libya from mostly the south. And then I'm going to spend a little bit of time on our interventions and what we're doing in this context. So this is just a very quick overview of the situation in Libya right now. You can see in the top left corner our estimate of about 600,000 migrants, just under 600,000 migrants that are currently in Libya. This is from IOM DTM program that collects a wide range of data on migration and mobility. And what you can also see here, which is extremely important, is that the bottom right bar charts indicate some of the main nationalities. And you'll notice right away that with Niger, Egypt, Sudan, and Chad, which are all bordering countries of Libya, we can account for just about 70% of the migrants in the country. Now, this is very important because, first of all, these movements of these nationalities into Libya are historic. They're very natural in a way, in the sense that they've been happening for a long time over the porous borders, generally it's economic migration, and most of these nationalities are concentrated also quite close to the borders to their own country. Now, the other very important aspect of this group of migrants is that for the most part, they're not nationalities that attempt to cross the Mediterranean. They're not nationalities that are registered in large numbers in Europe, in Malta or in Italy, where they are usually arrive. And they're also not nationalities that we see in large numbers in detention centers, which I think perhaps my colleague, Georgette Gagnon, spoke a little bit about yesterday about the situation surrounding the detention centers. So these are basically economic migrants. They do face challenges and difficulties, but they're not under a lot of pressure to escape or move in a northerly direction towards Europe. They tend to have the ability to return relatively easily to their own countries. And so you can see right away that, if we exclude this as, a problematic, if I can use that word, problematic types of migration in terms of the irregularity, in terms of the connections with the smuggling, the trafficking, and so on. In fact, we have still a big number, but a very manageable number of migrants, which are predominantly the rest are predominantly from West African countries, and a smaller number from East African countries, in particular Somalia, some Eritreans, and that's effectively the bulk of the migrant stock in terms of the representation. You can also see that men are very, very highly represented. We have about 80%, about 80% men, about 10% women, and the rest children. And this is, we have contexts in the, around the world where the male-female breakdown in countries is close to 50%, or sometimes women may even be 1 or 2 points higher. But in Libya, we have predominantly a migration of adult male. Now, what's important about that demographic number or picture is that this is not a static situation. So what I'm describing to you now is the current composition of the migrants in Libya. But a few years ago, 2015, 16, 17, we would have seen probably a lot higher percentage of women, many of whom were at risk of being trafficked, many of whom were from Nigeria, which is particularly which is a group that's particularly at risk of trafficking. And we were also seeing basically these numbers and this kind of breakdown in terms of the gender breakdown reflected in the arrivals in Europe at the time. So this is the situation now. And indeed, some of those issues related specifically to trafficking for sexual exploitation are still extremely challenging and still part of the issues that we're trying to tackle. But I would say that it's probably not as substantial in terms of numbers as it was some years ago. Now, the other two other, I think, important takeaways from this slide. But the first is that if we look at Libya pre-2011, so pre-revolution, basically when it had a fully functioning economy, the IOM estimates at the time were about 1.5 million migrants in the country. And some of the government estimates were even higher, even around 2 million. So we're at far, far lower numbers now. And this is obviously an indication of the instability, the insecurity, and the fact that the economy is far from, what it was. But what that tells us is that Libya has a tremendous capacity to absorb migrant labor. And in fact, it has a labor market that's structured in a way that requires migrant labor. And the other important aspect, which is much more current, is the fact that we've seen an important reduction in the number of migrants in Libya since the middle of 2020, when COVID reached the country. So about 15 months ago, we would have been looking at a slide that would have had probably about 680,000 migrants in Libya. We've gone down to even lower than this 597 by a little bit. And now it might be starting to come back up. It's a trend that we're watching, but basically the COVID pandemic slowed down the economy as it has around the world. The lockdowns were very hard on migrants in particular, who rely on daily wages. And, you know, if they can't work every day wherever they are, then they immediately feel the economic impact. And my theory, untested, but I'm pretty sure of it, is that a lot of these people were indeed from the neighboring countries, Egypt and Niger in particular, and basically returned home on their own overland when things got difficult in Libya. So we can see that even in a context as difficult as Libya, both with the conflict and the pandemic, the migration numbers indicate a reaction basically this trend of people returning home when things got difficult in the country, both health wise and work wise. Next slide, please. So this is just to make sure that you know what I've just described is can be visualized a little bit better and is clear to everybody. You see, obviously, the map of Libya. Some of the main routes, which are the main route from the east, is the nationalities, not just Sudan, but also the nationalities that I mentioned from the Horn of Africa, who primarily come up through Sudan into southeastern Libya. That part of the country is a very, very difficult and isolated area for us to work in. And then in the southwest, primarily coming in from Niger. This is the route that's most commonly used by the West African nationals and the Nigerians as well. Egyptians are mostly moving in the northeast in areas along the coastline. And you can see that there is an important representation of North African nationals in Libya, primarily Tunisians and Egyptians. And then the sub-Saharan Africans, including, of course, the Chad and the Nigerian and the Sudanese that I mentioned, make up just over half. And then we have smaller representations from other Middle Eastern countries and Asia. Asia being primarily Bangladesh, the Philippines, and to some extent Pakistan as well. Next slide, please. Now, this is just a historical view of the Mediterranean fatalities. Dead or missing migrants in the central, in all of the Mediterranean, but focusing in on the central Mediterranean, you can see how comparatively speaking this year, for example, because this 1,195 is the number for so far 2021, and you can see how much higher the death or missing numbers are than the Eastern or the Western Mediterranean. I think probably many of you know that we've had an important increase in level of activity in the Western Mediterranean towards Spain. And that's quite a dangerous route as well, particularly along the Atlantic. And you can see that despite this increase in the Western Mediterranean, still the Central Mediterranean is far more dangerous. You can also see historically that while the 1,195 is certainly not one of the tallest bars compared to 2015, 16, or 17, we have to put this into context because during those years, particularly 15, 16, and 2017, we had very, very substantial numbers of crossings and arrivals to Europe. You know, on average, those years, we were sometimes 170, 180,000 arrivals per year. And I think for maybe 2017, we were a little bit lower, but still probably around 130,000 people arrived. So, in fact, while we have lower numbers of crossings, the risk and the number of people dying and missing is alarmingly high. This is, of course, due to the absence of a state-led search and rescue operation in the Central Mediterranean. We have very few vessels operating, carrying out rescues of boats in distress. Now, what has happened, what has also evolved over the last 3 years in particular, so really since about 2019, is that the Libyan Coast Guard has been a lot more active in conducting rescue operations and bringing people back to Libya. So now that's important because they've really increased the number of people that they are picking up at sea and taking back to the country. We went from basically no capacity a few years ago to this year already over 22,000 people that have been picked up by the Libyan Coast Guard and taken back to Libya. If you could put on the next slide, please. And so this is a snapshot of the this aspect of the departures from Libya, and you can see that in all of 2020 we were just under 12,000 people returned to Libya, and so far in 2021 we're already over 22,000. I suspect that we will get to 30,000 quite easily, and probably I wouldn't be surprised if we see a number at the end of the year somewhere between 30 and 35,000 people. Now, I'll get into some of those issues in a moment. But what's very important when we're looking at the situation in the Central Mediterranean is, you know, the tendency, certainly from the European side, the tendency is to look at the data that's most easily available, which is usually the number of people that have arrived and that have been, you know, registered by primarily Italy and to some extent Malta in Europe, and to use this number as you know, the main indicator. And of course, from the perspective of from the simple perspective of, you know, as the number of people going up or down, arriving, going up or down, that's a very effective way to analyze the situation. But if we really want to try to understand what the migration dynamics are, and if we really want to try to understand what is happening in this corridor, we have to look at not just the number of people that succeed in crossing the Mediterranean, but also the number of people that attempt and don't succeed. I think this is a much clearer and more complete, not just the more complete picture, but it's a much clearer indicator, a much stronger indicator of what the situation is in Libya in terms of Libya as, you know, either the situation in Libya as a push factor, or in terms of Libya as, you know, a transit country or a point of departure for some people. So if we do that for 2021, if we look at the numbers that have been registered so far in Italy, we are at already about 32,000 people. Now, a good percentage of those is going to be from Tunisia. So we have to exclude probably as much as half of that. But still, even if we're working with just 15 or 16,000 having successfully made the crossing for Libya, it means that so far in 2021, together with those that have been taken back by the Libyan Coast Guard, we are somewhere probably between 35 and 40,000 people that have attempted to or have succeeded to cross the Mediterranean. And that is, I think, it's an important number, and it's an increase certainly over last year. And I think there's two main reasons for this. The one is with the criminality in Libya, the smugglers, the traffickers that have the space to operate, and perhaps more space and a greater ability to operate than when there is active conflict or more instability. And the second, contributing factor is probably the conditions in Libya, in terms of the working conditions, in terms of the living conditions, in terms also when it comes to the pandemic, the access to health services and the COVID risks, because Libya is also a country that's really that's been really struggling to get a handle on COVID, understandably, with a health system that basically has been neglected and in some cases even targeted during the conflict for 10 years now. So I think this is an important number to keep to keep an eye on, that cumulative number, the number of attempts to leave and people coming back, and the numbers that we have in Europe in terms of those that actually succeed. And unfortunately, we'll have a better idea, you know, towards the end of this year. But unfortunately, I think 2021 will show that that trend is going in the wrong direction. You'll see that, you know, what I described earlier in terms of the breakdown of, in terms of the gender breakdown, you'll see that again, you know, predominantly men. The gender breakdown before was, the stock, the number of people in Libya. This is the gender breakdown of those that have been, rescued or intercepted and taken back, but, it pretty much reflects that same reality. Now, when these people are taken back to Libya, when they're picked up at sea and taken back, the vast majority of them go into detention centers. And we're now in a situation in the country where we have about 6,000 people in detention. And at the beginning of the year, there were about 2,800. So we've had an increase of several thousand. But what I have a difficulty trying to analyze and understand is how it's possible that 22,000 people have been taken back to Libya. The majority were transferred from the disembarkment points to the detention centers. And yet the number of people in detention is only just, you know, double 2,800, let's say. So we have people that are being transferred into detention centers and then are unaccounted for. They are they effectively disappear from the data that is otherwise quite well tracked. That number this year is probably about 15,000 people that went into detention and are now, let's say, unaccounted for. And it's something that is very concerning to me because most of them have not been released, but have somehow in other ways been transferred out of these structures. And I think Georgette Gagnon spent a little bit more time on the detention systems, but we very much share this concern in all of the across the UN in terms of the lack of accountability that there is for the detention system. And of course, this is all tied into the fact that you know, Libya cannot be considered a safe place as long as people are going missing from the custody of the authorities, and also as long as the conditions that exist in these detention centers persist. Very quickly, just it's not specifically related to either international migration or the Mediterranean, but we also work on a very important issue of internally displaced Libyans in Libya. And the good thing here is that we're seeing an increase in the number of people, of Libyans that were displaced in their own country, able to return to their to the communities where they are from. And you can see that basically that green line is the number of people that are able to return or that have returned. The blue line below is the number of people that were displaced. And you can see that these trends very much coincide with conflict or lack of conflict. So when we have, you know, at the end of 2019, the beginning of 2020, where we had very, most intense conflict in some parts of the country, we see the trend of the displaced persons increasing. And then in around mid-2020, when the situation started to improve, eventually the ceasefire was signed last fall, we see that the two lines go in opposite directions, meaning that fewer and fewer people are displaced and more are returning to their homes. It's a little bit of an unusual situation of internal displacement in Libya because we don't have camps. Most people are displaced with in other homes, either with extended family, relatives, friends, And so, you know, it's not the kind of IDP image that maybe some people have of desolate people living in camps. There are no camps in the country, but nonetheless, you know, a lot of these IDPs or returnees are going from communities that have been seriously damaged by the conflict, or going back to areas that have sustained a lot of damage and will need support in being able in returning and being able to restart their lives where they're returning to. Next slide, please. Now, I'll just spend a few minutes on IOM in Libya and just describe a little bit what our approach is with respect to a number of different very important migration issues. We are the biggest operational agency on the ground within the UN system. We have a long history of working in Libya. We've been there since 2006. And currently have just over 500 staff throughout the country. We're able really to reach even the most difficult areas, even the most isolated areas, and which are primarily in the south. You can see on the slide there that it really is a national footprint. Next slide, please. So we have earlier this year, we launched our strategic objectives for 2021 to 2024. And these strategic objectives are they're obviously aligned with the internal global IOM strategy, as well as the regional one, tailored to the Libyan context. I'm not going to get into too much detail on the strategy, but what I wanted to convey to you is that we basically have a situation in the country right now where there are still very important and acute humanitarian needs in relation to not just what I've described already, the search and rescue activities, and then the work that the assistance that we're providing in the detention centers, but also in the communities as well. There are pockets of very high risk and very high vulnerability for migrants. So there's an important humanitarian element to our programming that has been there for many years, of course, throughout the conflict and through basically since 2011. For many years, that was the main programming area, but now with an improving situation, and specifically since last year, we've been able to start to look at much more, let's say, sustainable or durable programming and solutions that look at governance of migration and of migration management. Because clearly, I mean, the humanitarian assistance is necessary, but it is not a solution. It's just a temporary fix. It's assisting people who need life-saving assistance in some cases at that moment. But we're not going forward with how migration is managed or governed. So right now, we have over the last basically 12 to 18 months developed important areas of programming with the Libyan authorities on border management and security, on labor migration. Some good progress is being made on health, which has been really scaled up because of the pandemic. But we're already doing and we are continuing to do also work on other communicable diseases, and in particular on tuberculosis. We have basically a range of capacity enhancement activities, legislative review, legislative support to the Libyan authorities to try and improve migration management, migration governance, protection of people, of migrants in Libya. It is a context, as I described, where there is a labor market that relies on labor migrants, and one of the concerns is that while that number of migrants has decreased over the last 10 years, it is inevitable that it will increase as the situation improves politically and economically, and the economy picks up speed. And so if we don't have good systems in place to deal with those economic needs, those economic realities, there is a risk that the migrants will nonetheless return, move to Libya for work opportunities, which they will find. We'll have, an increasing number of migrants in an irregular status. So really what we're working towards is legal, orderly, and safe migration in a way that and trying to build systems that will help the state achieve that. Next slide, please. Just very quickly, some of our main points in the strategy are, of course, the government ownership. The evidence-based programming, we're relying very, very heavily on a very good knowledge of the situation in the country that IOM has developed over the years with respect to migration issues. It is an integrated approach. We want to deliver holistically, and what I mean by that is that there isn't one solution to this, this phenomenon or to these trends. The solution isn't just to send everybody home or to seal up the border or, to let everybody through. The solution is to use many different tools together, which include return, which include border security, which include safe and legal channels that help satisfy the needs of the private sector for workers. And so that's what we mean by an integrated approach. And we also have some very interesting, they're just starting out these initiatives, but some very interesting initiatives with the private sector as well, because ultimately the private sector is an important beneficiary of the migrant labor force, and whenever we can find private sector companies that are that are willing to recognize this and work with us, we do that, and we're doing some interesting things in that regard as well. This is, I think, I've already covered this slide, but basically it's two track programming: the response to immediate needs, humanitarian portfolio, and the other track, more on migration governance, more that I would say the midterm to long-term portfolio. Unfortunately, the situation is still very fragile in Libya, and so we have to be ready also with the humanitarian program to be able to scale up quickly in the event that instability returns or fighting breaks out again. Next slide, please. This is really an internal slide, but most important piece in it is the one on innovation. Well, it's not a coincidence that it's the biggest one. We have to keep, it's a very fluid context in the country. Migration flows are very fluid. The phenomenon is constantly changing. And all of these things mean that we have to be innovative with our responses, and that we have to be ready to adapt to a changing environment. And every environment is changing, but I've been in Libya now for 2 years, and I've seen probably three or four different Libyas in terms of how quickly things can change. They're all complicated. They're all difficult to understand. And it's really important that the programming that is developed is both realistic, but also innovative and ready to adapt. Next slide, please. This is just a brief summary of a lot of what I've said already. Basically, a lot of our governance work is based on improving community resilience, and also on community stabilization and community engagement with Libyan communities, which is also part of the peace building process. We are promoting migration governance through the different types of capacity building interventions that I mentioned. And then I think very importantly, we need to recognize that there are important elements of labor migration to the Libyan economy and to the Libyan labor market, and trying to find that balance between openness and security in order to try and harness that. Next slide, please. That's the end of my presentation, and I tried to provide you in the time that I had with a fairly comprehensive overview of not just the situation, but how we're responding. And thank you very much.
This lecture was part of the EMN Educational Seminar on Migration entitled Migration in the Multilateral World. The seminar is organized by the International Organization for Migration Slovakia as the coordinator of the Slovak EMN National Contact Point. This activity is funded by the European Union and co-funded by the Ministry of Interior of the Slovak Republic. Thank you for listening.